Metamedia presents New Horizons, conscious conversations for inner exploration and awakening with leading minds in the arts, sciences, astrology, and spirituality. Welcome to the Vernal Equinox 2024. Our astrological panelists are Kaylin Castell, Eric Myers, Ray Couture, and Robert Wilkinson, moderated by me, Carmen Viola. Thank you for joining us today. I'd like to do a short introduction of our guests. Kaylin Castell is the co-founder of Venus Alchemy, My Star Alchemy, and the former Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. In addition to writing monthly celestial timings for over 27 years, she enjoys sharing these mysteries through personal readings, her YouTube channel, and through online and in-person events. Kaylin has been a presenter at the Conscious Life Expo for the past 5 years, changing lives and perspectives from the visionary understanding that we inform the mysteries as much as they inform us. Welcome, Kaylin. Eric Myers is a counseling astrologer, author, and teacher. He holds an MA in transpersonal counseling psychology from Naropa University in Boulder. He has developed his astrological methodology for the past 25 years using a progressive Aquarian approach that integrates modern science, psychology, and universal spiritual principles. Eric has authored 7 astrology books, among them Uranus, The Constant of Change, Elements and Evolution, The Astrology of Awakening, and just released, The Spiritual Dimensions of the Beatles. Welcome, Eric. Robert Wilkinson is a practicing professional astrologer with over 50 years experience as a counselor, public speaker, author, publisher, and strategic analyst. His work blends astrology, humanistic psychology, and both Eastern and Western wisdom traditions. Robert was the first astrological blogger with almost 16 million page views with readers from around 130 countries. The author of 7 books, including the most recent, The Magic of Venus, Friendships, Soulmates, and Twin Flames, and Saturn, Spiritual Master, Spiritual Friend, and the pioneering work, A New Look at Mercury Retrograde. Welcome, Robert. And then finally, Ray Couture. Ray is an astrological counselor and life coach for over 50 years and has presented numerous workshops and lectures. He created Metamedia, a film company, to produce the only existing film recording of a lecture by Dane Rudyard, his teacher mentor. Ray was also a co-host of New Dimensions radio programs, exploring the cutting edge of new developments in human consciousness. He was featured in a Cut TV video on YouTube that garnered over 21 million views. Ray continues to give readings and produces a monthly astrology report on YouTube, Astrological Perspectives, and this New Horizons podcast. So welcome, everyone. So let's dive in. Let's go ahead and bring up the chart for GMT for the eclipse. And the first thing that we're going to talk about is Pluto in Aquarius. All right. So let me see. I do have a chart. However, it is set for 3:07 a.m. So the first thing that comes to mind with this chart for London on the eclipse date is the location of Pluto in Aquarius in the first house. So I'm going to turn it over to Kaylin to start first.
Thank you. All right. So am I speaking directly about Pluto and an Aquarius or about the eclipse or both? Just double checking.
Either both. Yes. Okay. This is a free for all.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah. So, and this is the equinox. Yeah. The movement of the equinox of that time. And so I just wanted to speak a little bit about the equinox, and these are a couple of things that people might not know about what happens at the equinox. One is that because the sun is rising due east and setting due west all day, traveling along the equator of the Earth, it has an effect of lowering the electromagnetic field of the Earth, and there are more equinox, what they call equinox cracks, in the field, the electromagnetic field that protects the Earth. And so more light gets in, and there are more northern lights, southern lights, all over the planet. There's more light coming in as a result of that. So that's one of the reasons why the equinox is something that's important to connect to and to work with in a ceremonial way, because there's more light available. Another thing that's happening at the equinox is that as the sun is rising, directly overhead will be the galactic center. And this happens just in March. So galactic center directly overhead. And what they found in doing studies and research around this is when galactic center is directly overhead, that is when psychic abilities are heightened. So I highly recommend doing ceremony, intention, tuning in, seeing what the equinox is about for you when the sun is rising, because that's the time that galactic center is directly overhead. And it lasts for about an hour, probably on either side of the sunrise. You can tune in to that, but it will change a little bit each day. So these are some of the effects of the equinox that are worth our tuning into, knowing about, and connecting with. And just one last thing I'll say before I turn this over to someone else is that I got this book years ago from the Sacred Order of the Golden Dawn. And they were talking about why they said the most important time to do ceremony for the equinox is around the sunrise. And that it's what it does is it lowers the electromagnetic field of the Earth, which is what the equinox cracks talk about as well. And that we can access other realms and dimensions or other possibilities more easily. So so that's what I want to say about the equinox to get us started.
Thank you, Kaylin. Okay, who else wants to jump in?
Okay, I'll say a few comments about this chart. First off, thank you for having me. It's been a honor to be invited. Thank you. And to work with my other colleagues here. This is a fascinating chart to me because I really think it invites completely new perspectives. The North Node, always the point of development, not only in Aries, signifying something new, but with Mercury as well, right on the North Node there. And even with Chiron, something healing. And I think what is healing might be about thinking for ourselves, Mercury in Aries. I believe that the karma that we're collectively resolving, as usually seen with the South Node, but I don't see it on this particular handout, but the Libra South Node really points to kind of culturally conditioned or socialized ways of viewing things. And then Venus ruling that is with Saturn to rely on the authorities in Pisces, the spiritual authorities. And they've been historically the ones who told us what to think. But perhaps there's an invitation for us to learn how to think for ourselves a bit more. And ruling the North Node is also Mars in Aquarius. Do we have the courage, Mars, to go into the metaphysical, new ideas, new paradigms, astrology, these types of things? And that, of course, reinforces Pluto in Aquarius, which I'm sure we'll be talking about more and more. But I just wanted to give voice to this kind of motion I see about independent thinking, taking charge of our own destiny, and really thinking outside the box.
Thank you, Eric. Robert, you want to jump in?
Yes. There are several outstanding features of this particular chart. First of all, in the Jones patterns, it's a bucket. You'll notice everything is within 108 degrees except for the moon. The moon becomes the handle. It's the focus. Wherever this chart falls in our chart, that moon at 4 Leo is going to be what the focus is for the next 90 days. Because it is said that any kind of an equinox or a solstice chart is actually a snapshot of the next 90 days. One of the interesting things is it doesn't matter where this happens. Pluto is at 2 degrees of Aquarius, which happens to be the exact same degree as Saturn's retrograde station back in 2020, which accompanied the onset of COVID. So what we see here is Pluto is now stirring up the new Aquarian seeds that were originally structured in 2020. And that was still back when everything was jumping between late Capricorn and early Aquarius. The other thing about the solstice or the equinox is that you look at the ruler of wherever the sun is, because it marks the leaving of one quadrant and moving into another season. In this case, Mars is the ruler, and Mars is on a Sabian symbol of preparation, of foresight, of planning for the future to prepare for what is coming. So I see this as a preparatory season where we're going to get glimpses of what we need to do in order to take care of business down the road. And the other thing about it is that obviously the sun is the focus in any given chart for an equinox or a solstice. In this case, the sun only makes three different aspects. Two of them are waning. There's a sun semi-square Jupiter, and there is a sun septile Uranus. There is also the obvious sun sextile Pluto. So in this case, the sextile provides productivity for getting to the seed core of things, but the waning septile to Uranus shows that it's in the seed-producing closing phase of whatever was set into motion last year when the sun conjuncted Uranus. So this is an interesting chart to me because it's so self-enclosed except for that moon. So the moon becomes the handle, the focus. It's how you get a grip on things. Wherever this season is going, look to 4 degrees of Leo in your chart.
Thank you, Robert. Looks like we may have lost Ray. Ray, are you back yet?
Well, there's all kinds of ways, as everybody here knows, and thank you for inviting me to this process. All kinds of ways to look at this. Let's start with it being the solar system and the Capricorn, Cancer, ascendant, descendant line is the horizon of the Earth. And so, as we know, the Earth turns. So the first event or planet to rise will be Pluto in Aquarius. And the rising here, I'm going to go to a little Hellenistic stuff with the middle 10 degrees of Capricorn related mostly to Virgo. And the Capricorn itself refers us to the 10th house, where again, with Scorpio up there, we find the Hellenistic way of seeing Pisces in Scorpio up there in the 10th house. So involved here in the lower half, at first to rise is Pluto and the last is Uranus, which to me indicates that everything is up for grabs. Everything has to change. And the creativity involved in trying to do that has to do the work that's involved in the square from the ascendant to the North Node, if you will. And I always see the North Node as something well, akin to destiny, although I really prefer it to be a challenge. And it's in the middle part of Aries. It has to do with Leo. So Leo has an awful lot to do with the fact that the moon is the first thing and the only thing above the horizon in the sign of Leo, straight up in the first 10 degrees. So that flies me back to the fifth house, corresponds to Leo, where I see that the Pluto-Uranus trine is involved in trying to resolve the conflict that we have and the validity of the conflicts that need to be resolved in everything to do with the way we think about what we're doing in this world. And with Jupiter in the third house, corresponding to the Gemini fifth house, and Jupiter there up in the Virgo part, he's really talking about more compassion. Of course, that is definitely part of what the Pisces, Venus, and Saturn and Neptune are bringing to the table as well. But somehow or other, the South Node didn't appear up there. And there are many ways to understand that, but one of them is to understand that the South Node represents the possibility of you surrendering to this idea that the social norm is the way we ought to continue going forward to build on what Robert was talking about with regard to the last, I think it was the last position of Uranus. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it really triggered.
Thanks, Ray. I understand that his internet keeps going out, so
the people,
hopefully that will resolve itself.
To really
let me see if I can switch to this chart, which is the same chart for DC. Yep, that's showing up on my screen. So does anyone want to speak to this now that the planets have sort of shifted into different houses?
Well, this also is, it kind of is interesting because now with this chart, Mars is also the ruler of the ascendant. It's in an area that involves a deepening of faith and a deepening of experience. Again, Mars is still on the preparation, the foresight degree. So it shows this is completely preparatory and future oriented. And the thing I didn't say before that really, I think it's very special here is that the moon is in three different 10th harmonic aspects. It makes a quintile to Uranus, a biquintile to Venus, and a tradecial complementary angle to a quintile to Mercury. So the moon is in a phase of high specialization in this chart, both personal specialization via the quintile, wherever that falls in our charts, that's where we will have highly specialized, unique awakenings. But the tradecial and the biquintile are both interactive. And so we can look to both the awakening of unique qualities within us over the next 90 days, but also unique interactive situations, perhaps gifts. My keyword for the tradecial is serendipity. It's something that's like a lucky chance. It's a perfect gift for your circumstance, or it's a perfect circumstance for your gift. And with the moon and Mercury, these are the two, you might say, most intimate planets. And so I have a feeling there's going to be some really lucky communications, lucky interactions, lucky discoveries, and in some ways, very fortunate relationships, because they will become more specialized and less run-of-the-mill.
Yeah, I want to make another note. Thank you for sharing that. And my view is, and what I've written about astrology of awakening, is the moon is historically something that we are further maturing, more at the egoic personality level. And the sun, in my view, is awakening, more enlightened, more spiritual realization. The big energy self and the smaller, more kind of physical lunar self. And a Leo moon, as I have in my own chart, I will disclose, can at times be much more identified and attached and oriented around things to do with the personality. And with the opposition to Pluto, the negotiation and resolution of whatever psychological dynamics or wounding, we all have something to clean up. And the sun is, in my view, conjunct Neptune. That's less than 3 degrees. I understand it's over the sign. Sometimes people don't look at that, but I do. And to me, there is this awakening towards a far broader conception, perhaps, of our identity, that we more or less are part of oneness, Neptune and Pisces. We are. We can learn to identify more as spirit rather than our kind of our own preoccupation and separation consciousness and the survival and strategizing at the personality level. To me, this is indicative of this time frame of Pluto shifting to Aquarius from Capricorn, and that we're still in the midst of. We still got one little retrograde back to Capricorn later on this year for just a couple months, but I think we're making this transition collectively in order to realize, Aquarius, that we're all in this together. We're all interconnected and interdependent, and our own kind of individual agendas or preoccupations are learning to quiet or resolve, or just to shift from the urgency of self-gain or recognition how are we going to be part of the so-called age of Aquarius that we're moving into? So Sun conjunct Neptune is to develop spiritually, to shift our identity, to embody our soul self, to learn how to more or less get ourselves out of the way and be a conduit for inspiration or imagination or intuition. I call Neptune the three eyes. And how can we make room for that? And how are we going to distribute that is part of that. And so, like I said before, Mercury on the North Node is perhaps thinking differently about the self, Aries, rather than I am a separate individual. I am part of oneness is perhaps part of the invitation that we see here.
Thanks, Eric. Kaylin, would you like to speak about this chart?
All right. So I love what everybody's been saying, and I just have a couple of things to add. One of the things I've been really looking at and feels significant is how close Chiron is to the United States Chiron. We're having the U.S. Chiron return. And with Mercury and Chiron and the North Node all kind of hanging out there, the eclipse is going to be highly featuring Chiron. And on April 3, I think Chiron comes within 1 degree of the USA Chiron. And so what does that mean for this country? And what are they? How are we healing the wounds so that we can go forward in a better way? And I think also Pluto and Aquarius is about that as well. And I think that's been beautifully spoken into. So how are we going to communicate that? How are we going to come from the place of love and compassion and forgiveness for all the wrongs that have been done from this country to other countries and to people in this country, that sort of thing? I think those are going to be on the forefront. And then a couple of other things is that Jupiter is almost at 15 degrees Taurus, and that is the cross quarter point for Beltane, or the May cross quarter point, the exact halfway point between the spring or the March equinox and the June solstice, depending on what hemisphere you're in, what season you're experiencing. And so something that was highly celebrated by many ancient cultures, particularly the Celtic people. And it's on its way to the conjunction to Uranus. I know we're going to talk more about later, but it just feels like this equinox is setting up, and I think this has been spoken into already, but it's just setting up so many things and has the potential to really rock our world in a new way and hopefully in supportive and amazing ways. Because if we think about the Taurian mysteries, is how do we experience the garden of earthly delight? How do we experience pleasure and beauty and connection and intimacy with the earth and with each other? So those are some other things that I would today are worth tuning into at this time.
Lovely. Thank you. Ray, you're here.
Well, when you look at the Chiron in the end of the fifth house, which is really the beginning of the sixth, because these house cusps are really ramps up in and out, and that's why you have so many different house systems, but it's never that exact. And so Chiron is really pushing us in some kind of way, in the middle part of Aries Leo, to respond to our sense of lack of power as a people, because the moon is the most elevated thing up there, and mundane astrology does refer to the people and the current state of affairs in a country, for instance. So when you have Scorpio rising, it's really a healing kind of energy that is being proposed as part of a path forward. And Scorpio being the eighth sign brings me to the eighth house, which is in Gemini. And once again, it's resolving conflicts. That's what Gemini is about. That's why people try to connect, so that since we have only one solar system and it's produced all of us and everything that ever will be and ever was, it's pleasant and necessary for us to enjoy the pleasure of knowing that whoever and however we relate to anyone, communicate third house, we're talking to another version of what is essentially ourself. If you buy into the quantum physics idea from the cosmologists who say that the cosmos is conscious, you have to have a conscious sun, a conscious solar system. And that is the spirit itself, trying to address and speak. But as Eric pointed out in one of his books a while ago, The Astrology of Awakening, that the ego's presence here in the chart is represented mostly by the moon, because it also represents childhood, child development, and all of that. And what we see here is that in the first quadrant, if this were a child's chart, this would be the development of the ego. And the ego here has this Pluto in it, and the cusp of the house of its thought process, third house, is in the Taurus part of Capricorn. So there's a sense that we have a responsibility here to really renew and heal our value as a people in order to be able to, Uranus in the upper half, the controlling element of the upper half. So we might be able to change the way we are represented in our government, or change the way our government operates. And up there in the 10th house is Leo, Sag, Aries. A new validity is required. It's kind of a revolutionary time in many respects, because when we start talking about Pluto and Aquarius, it hasn't been there since 1798. And a lot of things happened between its entrance in 1778 and 1798 that may find its mirror here in the days to come. So starting with Pluto and that opposition, really realizing that if we can construct Capricorn a critical analysis of our thinking process, we would realize that we have an obligation to express ourselves in a way that means that we have to fulfill our own personal obligations. And so that's the way it would work out in anybody's personal chart as well. So you just have to look for where the Pluto in Aquarius falls in your chart. What department, what house?
Thanks, Ray. Shall we dive a little deeper into this Pluto in Aquarius now?
I'll go. Okay, so if we think about Pluto, its job is to bring empowerment. And the way that it brings empowerment is by putting a light on the shadow and the shadow issues that we're dealing with, or that maybe we haven't even been conscious of, or maybe we are conscious of. And when we think about Pluto in Aquarius, Aquarius being a revolutionary energy, it's on the cutting edge, it's avant-garde, it's ahead of its time, usually. And I know that a lot of people have been talking about there may be shadow issues with AI, or what's going to happen. We don't necessarily know, but we can imagine that the tech abilities that we have now are just going to exponentially grow during this time. And how do we engage that in a way that's going to be useful and supportive to everyone and not just a few people? And that's one of the challenges. Also, it's about expanding consciousness and awareness so that we have a bigger picture, a more cosmic perspective. And so what's in the way of that? And anything in the way of that will come up for us to have to deal with, I guess, is, you know, to face, to hopefully transmute and transform, so that we're no longer at the effect of it, but that we can now be empowered by that expanding awareness. So that's what I got.
Okay, so Pluto and Aquarius. there's so much that we can say about it, and many different dimensions to it. And what Caitlin spoke to is absolutely relevant and stuff to consider. I want to bring in or highlight another side of it. I don't want to be too political here, but what I see going on in the U.S., on the world stage is a shift, and the struggle around that shift. The Pluto in Capricorn has emphasized the darker components of wealth and stature and self-gain and the haves versus the have-nots. And my view is that this character named Trump is a caricature of a lot of the darker side around the entitlement for those in positions of authority and in power. Even I want immunity and I'm above the law, and I have privilege, and there's probably been no other defendant that has been able to attack judges and prosecutors and play golf and not have any repercussions. So, you know, the way that things have developed has been tilted in the direction of those with power and privilege. And what I see out there, especially amongst young people, those who have Uranus and Neptune and Aquarius, born in the 90s and the zeros, they're coming of age. And they're very progressive. Many of them identify more in terms of socialism or other types of interdependent philosophies that are about our collective survival and health, about sharing and oneness, rather than the preoccupation with individual status and privilege. And so I see this amplified on the world stage as Pluto moves from Capricorn to Aquarius, which is for a couple years and we're still in the middle of. And I think that Pluto and Aquarius for almost 20 more years is going to highlight the challenges, the issues, the shifting of institutions and protocol and paradigms, and just the way we operate in this way. There's going to be substantial resistance. One of the things I believe is naive is when people see an astrological age shifting and they think, oh, that looks wonderful. Everything's going to be terrific. I disagree. It means that that's the work. It means that that is the challenge for us to grapple with. It's not going to just be in full blossom on day one. But that is the opportunity, is how are we really going to operate as one interdependent organism? And if we don't, then the stakes and the challenges and the consequences, I think, are going to be formidable and probably even challenge our survival. So I see it as a wonderful opportunity for togetherness, but I'm not naive that there's going to be a lot of resistance to this, just like there was in the 1960s with the Uranus-Pluto conjunction. Tremendous resistance to that shift. And its ultimate backlash that we saw after that period as well.
Anyone else want to talk to Pluto in Aquarius before we move to any kind of conjunctions?
Sure. Pluto, again, as Ray pointed out, Pluto hasn't been here since the period of 1777 to 1798. And that set, I believe, because Pluto is the power of the seed, as per Rudyard, it's the Shivaic rebirth. It's the pattern is of the entire organism is in the seed. So Pluto reveals the seed, it sprouts. And so in my view of things, Pluto sprouts seeds based in whatever area it occupies. In this case, we had Uranus, as Eric pointed out, we had Uranus in Aquarius between 1995 and 2003. We had Neptune in Aquarius between 1998 and 2011. As I see it, Uranus awakens and Neptune dreams whatever it is into collective consciousness. So the collective consciousness awakened to a new iteration of Aquarian energies back here in 1995 to 2003. And this awakened energy was dreamed into the collective during Neptune, where it kind of lay fallow, because remember, Uranus and Neptune and Pluto are all invisible planets. So these become potential spiritual energies that can only be brought into manifestation through the seven visible planets, which then brings us to a very remarkable thing that happened in December of 2020. It was called the Grand Mutation. And this is every 20 years, Jupiter and Saturn conjunct. And we've just finished 200 years of conjunctions in Earth. And we've just begun 200 years of conjunctions in air. And just to address an anomaly, yes, there's always a shift in an element before the final one, which is always in the old element. So we had the Jupiter conjunction in air in 1980, but it went back into Earth in 2020. Now it's back in air for the next 200 years, at least for the next 180 years. Then I think it'll be in fire, and then it'll come back into air, and then it'll go into fire for 200 years. And that grand mutation took place at exactly 1 degree Aquarius, the Adobe Missions degree. And it's all about enlisting in a collective effort. And as I see it, the symbol involves the cooperative creation of what might be called a spiritual touchstone for those in the future who will come after we're gone. And so everything that we began, that began to be generated via the Jupiter-Saturn at 1 degree Aquarius in December 2020, it's been reinforced by several conjunctions at one Aquarius, you know, kind of filling in the local conditions, so to speak. But now that Pluto is actually camped out at 1 degree Aquarius most of this year and next year, this is, you might say, the fail-safe point, where Pluto is now going to sprout the seeds of whatever the grand mutation was about. And because it's Jupiter and Saturn that's the grand mutation, this affects societies all over the world. It affects the rules of society, the progress of society, the vision of society, as it can be interpreted in local terms because of the Jupiter-Saturn rather than Pluto, which is kind of a global energy. And on that one, I'll turn it over to Ray.
From the perspective that the cosmos is conscious and intelligent and is trying to become aware of itself as us, through us, gives us eyes to see us, see itself. The sun here, from a geocentric perspective, is below the horizon. So it represents some subjective development, and it means everything and everyone within the context of what everyone on the planet, all the so-called nations and tribal societies, it really is basically saying that the absolute necessity here is to really focus on Pluto. So Pluto, ultimately, since it's the one of the rulers of Scorpio, it is really down in the deepest portals of the deepest unconscious as you can get. And the unconscious of the solar system, so to speak, it thinks in terms of millennials, whereas you and I, on the human scale, only thinks in terms of a few years. But Pluto here, at the outer edges, having descended from the Kuiper belt like an egg into a uterus, represents the fundamental choice. Since, Ridger brought up the orbital motion of the planet is important because it also may be more important than the planet itself because it carries the history of that planet. The function of Pluto is ultimately healing by the elimination of what is obsolete and the pulse of something new that comes from the long millennial arc of the path of Pluto around the sun. But then I add a little quantum physics to it. As the particle is the sole governing force of the field, I look at the field here of Pluto as everything, from Neptune all down to the sun. So the whole entire potential, which is eternal because the sun is alive, part of a living cosmos, all that potential is on the chopping block up there with Pluto, which asks us this question. Life or death, take your pick. What should you like? Are we going to have renewal, or are we going to go into a suicidal downswing so that the next species that this Earth could produce might be a little more inclined to cooperation rather than conflict? That's what I believe is this chart really is trying to tell us on that deeper, more transpersonal. It's not what about Ray? How's Ray going to survive this? I am concerned, but that's not what this chart's not about me. It's about all of us. Rob brought it up. Eric brought it up. Everybody sees this is a world transformational time. And the equinox is telling us, get it together now. Miss this moment, and then Chiron is stronger in the Leo part of Aries, it gives us, instead of a motivation, gives us a pain in the heart. What we shoulda, coulda, woulda done. The cusp of the 12th house, the woulda, shoulda, coulda house in Libra, in the Aquarius part of Libra, saying you've got to overthrow the social norm. You have to have radical change. Uranus, also in Taurus, ruled by Venus, but the Venus of Taurus says you have intrinsic value as human beings, sentient beings on this planet. The society's mind is something that is more concerned with fitting in rather than in making change. And we know that Libra consciousness, not Libra people or suns or this or that, but the Libra consciousness has to do with conformity, with the idea that we are all supposed to get along. Well, that's what should be the social ideal, and it is, but we are organizing ourselves mostly according to Saturn, the past. And then when you talk about Neptune here, since it represents this unity, it also represents social obligation. Because the sun in Aries has to do something new. We have a social obligation to do something new. Because the Neptune is in Pisces, Cancer, Scorpio. Revive faith in ourselves and take some action to change things and use our wounds as a motivating factor to be better, to make better choices in our daily lives.
To pick up on what Robert said earlier about a preparation kind of time, I wanted to mention a couple more points about preparing. Is that Neptune does get up to 29:55, I think, Pisces this year, and then it goes retrograde, and then it enters Aries next year. Uranus gets up to late 27-ish or so Taurus this year, and then it gets to Gemini next year. Pluto still has this one about 80-some-odd day dip back into Capricorn in September through November, and then it fully settles into Aquarius later on. And so when outer planets change signs, there really is this big shift in the collective. So really what's going on now is a lot of preparation for that. And even the Uranus-Pluto trine, when Uranus gets to Gemini, it will be trine Pluto in early Aquarius. That is getting rather close this year, but not, you know, exact. But next year it does. It gets quite exact next year. So in air signs. So we're cleaning up matters this time frame to get there. And what are we cleaning up? Well, Earth with Pluto. We talked about that transitioning from Capricorn to Aquarius. Uranus transitioning from Taurus to Gemini, and this is what the Jupiter Uranus applying conjunction in Taurus right now, I believe, is about, which is saying, look, we can have a more awake Uranus, a spiritually meaningful connection with the Earth, rather than looking at it as simply material for our own goods and bank accounts and what have you. And then a revolution of thought when Uranus gets to Gemini. So I think we're wrapping up some of our mishandling of the Earth element that might have been more about our own uses and desires and using the Earth rather than being, honoring it from a more spiritual kind of consciousness. Where we have a sense of borrowing it rather than owning it. So right now, Sun conjunct Neptune is to develop our consciousness. And then Neptune moving to Aries, another one, which is a renewal of spirituality and what it means to be an individual, Neptune in Aries. So I'm excited for all of these changes. But right now, we're kind of in this liminal kind of transitional zone. And there can be a lot of uncertainties when we're in transitions, a lot of unknowns. That my pulse on the collective is there's a lot of uncertainty and unease and fear out there. and people do not have a solid ground about what the heck is going to be developing now. And there's a lot of turbulence in the collective psyche as we make this shift over this next year.
We only have about 7 minutes or so to sort of give some final thoughts. Ray, I know that you would like to chat. You are on mute at the moment. So I know Robert would also like to speak. So, okay, Robert, did you want to speak to this? Have some last words you'd like to share?
See, to me, the sun conjuncts the outer invisible planets once a year. And so imagine a being shrouded in darkness is on stage, and then from stage left, a being, a luminous character slowly approaches the shadowed character. That is sun conjuncting one of the outer planets. And then the shadowed being is illuminated. Okay, when the sun aligns with it, it's full spectrum lighting, and that's a solar conjunction. And we've just had the last solar conjunction in Crypto in Capital Carbon equivalent to the 235 years. We only have two more solar conjunctions in one year or this year, next year. And then, as Eric talked about, it's all into a three chord harmonic of Uranus in early Gemini, of Saturn conjunct Neptune in early Aries, and Pluto in early Aquarius. This three-note chord is going to establish an entirely different holographic energy pattern for the world, because it's a whole different energy. We're moving from earth and water into fire and air. So it's truly a major shift. And I do want to say that I think we're going to, again, as I think it was Ray said, it takes a long time for transitions between significant ages. We're not going to see a light switch go on at 1 o'clock in the morning on May 22nd or whatever. It just doesn't work that way. But what we will see is over time, we will see more and more of these patterns coming into play, because it's new. And in the interest of full disclosure, I have a stellium in Aries in the ninth house. My experience of that sign is don't look back, go forward. So Aries becomes a time when we go forward. If Neptune is what is in fashion collectively, it shows that we're going to move out of 14 years of ambivalence, deception. Is it this? Is it that? We're all swimming in the ocean. What ocean? The ocean of all feelings of all humans through all time. It's the collective soup. We're all in the collective soup right now, which is why we have to develop our ability to see what's ours and what's in the collective that we don't necessarily have to take personally. But once Neptune goes into Aries, it's a whole different ballgame. The collective consciousness is going to move from the hesitancy and the ambivalence and the superstitions and the belief systems of Pisces, and they're going to move into the Aries slogan of just do it. So the entire consciousness of the collective is going to be, what can we do about it? What can we do about it now? What can we do about it yesterday? And I suspect a lot of people are going to become a lot more impatient beginning in 2025. I just see that there's going to be, but then Saturn and Aries will bring new structure to this new pioneering Aries energy. And the Saturn-Neptune conjunctions are long wave conjunctions. They last a long time. And that's going to pervade the period after 2025. And then I see like 2033, there's a Jupiter-Pluto conjunction at 15 Aquarius on the Angel Point. And that moves everything more Aquarian and out of whatever old energies we're still dealing with.
Thank you, Robert. Eric has his hand raised. Okay, go, Eric.
Yes, just one quick point to pick up on what Robert just said. I loved hearing about the soup, and that's so apt for Pisces. I just wanted to add that the work right now, as we prepare for these outer planet changes for good, while Saturn is in Pisces right now, and Saturn being a separation type of energy where we can dissect things and pull it apart and more or less get a little bit more discerning and analytical about the soup that we've been marinating in and living in for however long, forever, probably thousands of years. And so we need to get real with Saturn in Pisces and get more defined about what we've inherited and how we're going to mature that Saturn in order to move towards this renewal. So the challenge of Saturn in Pisces right now, and I know I've been feeling it a bit, is it can be some apathy or lethargy. You know, it's just a slog. Part of me is impatient. I want the world to shift and wake up. What's taking it so long? You know, I got into astrology in the 90s, and I've been waiting for the mid-2020s for 25 years, and here we are, and hurry up. Oh, how much longer am I going to have to wait till things start to change? We could still be electing Donald Trump again. What the heck? So part of Saturn in Pisces is to be patient, to understand the big picture, and know that, as Robert pointed out, and Ray and others, we are shifting. And we will have this revolution, but it's gradual.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, Kaylin, final thoughts.
Oh my gosh. So the equinox is about equal balance of day and night. Aries is about restoring the balance, the cosmic order, and taking inspired, decisive action. So with Chiron, Mercury, North Node, Sun moving into Aries very quickly, those are some things that we can tune into and work with as we're moving towards these other planetary energies shifting into Aries. So we are building the foundation to stand on to take that action from when we get there.
All right. We have hit our 2 o'clock point, our hour. Ray, did you have any other thoughts before we end our panelist discussion?
Just really, really, let's remember that the last time Pluto was in Aquarius, very interesting things happened, like the birth of the United States of America, the French Revolution in 1789, the Bill of Rights ratified in 1791, and now we're in a position where the upper half of this chart says, okay, folks, it's time to change everything so that it fits with the ideas and perspectives of the founding of our country and the transformation as it is going on in the world. We need to keep up with it. We need to participate with it, not sit back and try to see ourselves as the policemen of the world.
Well, with that, I thank you all for joining. Have a blessed rest of your day, and let's navigate these waters.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you joining us here. We'll have to clean up a lot of it because internet failures were crazy. We had everything worked just fine until we started, and the internet decided it didn't want to cooperate. So,
for our panelists, please leave your windows open for about 2 or 3 hours so the recording can upload. Leave it on. And thank you so much.
Thank you for hosting this fabulous activities here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. So please support our efforts to continue providing consciousness-raising programming. Go to newhorizonspodcast.org. No amount is too small.